This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. For years, we've been hearing about an expansion of natural gas infrastructure in the Northeast, including Connecticut. The notion is that the region could capitalize on this increasingly abundant, lower-cost fuel as a bridge to a new renewable energy economy. But many environmentalists question this strategy, worried that big investment in fossil fuels will slow the expansion of renewables, and that reliance on fracking from nearby Pennsylvania and further away states presents its own kind of volatility. Add to that the very local concerns over gas pipeline expansion projects. Residents of rural western Massachusetts are voicing big concerns about a new pipeline plan that takes the fuel through their backyards into New Hampshire. Another smaller expansion project is slated for northern Connecticut. New England Public Radio's Henry Epp has been traveling along the path of the proposed Northeast Energy Direct project, hearing from residents along the way. Today, Where We Live, he joins us to talk about what he's learned. We'll find out more about the scope of other natural gas projects planned for our region. You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. Comment on our website, wnpr.org/where we live. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. We welcome into our studio Henry Epp, is a host and reporter at New England Public Radio, NEPR.net, if you want to find out more about his reporting. Henry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, what is the Northeast Energy Direct Pipeline?
Well, it's a pipeline expansion project that the company Kinder Morgan wants to bring through up from the fields that fracked gas is coming from in Pennsylvania through New York State and then through western Massachusetts and southern New Hampshire, ending in eastern Massachusetts, the town of Dracut. It would go through a lot of rural areas, particularly in western Massachusetts and southern New Hampshire. That's what my reporting is focused on.
And I heard your reporting on the air. And essentially what you did is you went to the border of New York and in Massachusetts, where this pipeline first comes into your listening area, and you stopped along the way. Where'd you stop first?
I stopped first in a small town right before the Massachusetts border, where I met this man and his wife, Albert Gordon and Ruth Gordon, and they were very adamantly against the pipeline. One of many people out in that region that's very opposed to this pipeline.
Let's actually listen to some of Albert Gordon.
Absolutely not. Not until as a matter of fact, I'll put every obstruction in their path. I'll sit in front of their bulldozer if necessary.
Okay, so the pipeline would be adjacent to their land. If you go out into this region of western Massachusetts and New York State, Henry, as I do quite often, you see a lot of signs, stop the pipeline. Sounds like Albert probably has one of those signs.
I actually don't remember if he had a sign or not, but a lot of his neighbors do for sure. I mean, you see them all over this region of the state.
And he says he's going to put every obstruction in his path. I mean, what is he talking about there? What sort of obstructions is he going to put in their path?
I mean, you know, there's the theoretical, like, really just sitting in front of their bulldozers, as he said. You know, the opponents to this project have really, you know, made themselves known in public meetings. The federal process that happens here, they've flooded the process with public comments. They're just incredibly vocal about their opposition right now, and that's about what they're doing.
And maybe now's a good time to just say that the public comment period was supposed to, at this point, be closed, but it's essentially right. Still open. They're still getting public comment, including even just last night in western Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's right. Senator Stan Rosenberg, he's the Senate president of Massachusetts, and he was hearing a lot that people weren't getting enough of a voice, weren't getting enough of a chance to public comment, to make public comments on this project. So he held a hearing of his own last night. He's going to submit all those public comments by hand. He's going to take them down to Washington to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is overseeing this project. FERC, as they're called, is delaying the comment deadline to October 16th, and that was to accommodate one final public hearing in the town of Ringe, New Hampshire. And then, as they told me, they'll still accept public comments even after that deadline.
Including the meeting I was reading about last night. A lot of these public comment sessions, there's an awful lot of opposition. You don't hear an awful lot of people
speaking
in support of this pipeline going through western Mass.
Yeah, that's very true. So that was one of the things that I was looking for when I went out on this trip was, you know, we know the opposition is out there. They're very vocal. But I really wanted to see, I mean, are there people out there that have more of an open mind about this, that are even proponents of this pipeline? And I did find a few people.
Yeah, including somebody in Dalton, Mass, named Stuart Sargent, says he's frustrated by the way opponents have attempted to block Kinder Morgan. He told you that he thinks local leaders should be looking at the pipeline from a different angle. Let's listen to a bit of him.
If we need a fire truck or training of our firemen or policemen in case there is an accident, any kind of accident. Let's get the pipeline people to pay for it. You know, let's get something out of it ourselves.
Yeah, so Stu Sargent, I found him because, as we were talking about before, there's these Stop the Pipeline signs everywhere, and his house had the sign that said American Energy, American Jobs, and this was the first sign I saw in the whole trip. This was sort of in the middle of the Northern Berkshires, that there was a sign for the pipeline. It doesn't say build the pipeline explicitly, but it says it's sort of this pro-pipeline message, and he was one of the few just sort of everyday people that I found that were really proponents of this pipeline.
So, of course, the pipeline goes through a lot of rural fields. It goes through some people's backyards. Mm-hmm. One of the big controversies is around the sites of compressor stations. A little bit later on in the program, we're going to be hearing from a town resident from Windsor, Massachusetts, someplace that you stopped. But you also went to Northfield, Massachusetts, which is the site of another compressor station.
That's right. I spoke to two residents there who are up in this area of Northfield, very rural, very hilly, and they're really concerned about the health and safety effects of the compressor station in particular. They're worried about what the emissions will be from that compressor station, and they're worried about the possibility of accidents and explosions and how that could really affect the land, the water, and their homes in that region.
You talked to Martha Rollman. She told you she worries how the compressor station might impact the stream that goes through her property. She said it's one factor that makes her ready to, well, maybe just pick up and leave her home.
We'll just have to kind of walk away from it now and call it a loss. And it's not just a financial loss, it's a, you know, it's an emotional loss.
Have you thought about where you would go if you...
As far away from Northfield as possible.
That's Martha Rollman talking to you, Henry, up.
Yeah, that's right. That's a sentiment I heard from a lot of people. Just really, if this comes in, they don't want to be there anymore. And they're really feeling, many people that I spoke to, they're really feeling this sort of limbo where they, you know, they want to leave if this comes in, but they also don't want to give up their homes. They've worked really hard. Many people I spoke to built their own homes. They've built their organic farms. They've really found, very intentionally found these rural places to live in Western Massachusetts and New Hampshire, and they don't want that disrupted. They don't want that peaceful sort of rural life to be disrupted.
We're talking about a pipeline expansion project through Western Massachusetts and into New Hampshire. Some of the pipeline expansion projects of Kinder Morgan also impact Connecticut, and we're talking with Henry Epp, who's a Morning Edition host, reporter at New England Public Radio, based in Springfield, Massachusetts. His reporting on this has followed this pipeline throughout Western Mass. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266 with some of your thoughts. One thing just to note, later on in the program, we'll be hearing from a Kinder Morgan representative who I spoke with yesterday. He's been saying, Henry, look, in some places where we build pipelines and compressor stations, property values actually go up. There's been new development around places. Someone like the woman we just heard from may want to abandon her land, but many other people are willing to build near pipelines.
Yeah, that's right. That's an argument from Kinder Morgan. I think the people that are opposed to this project, the people that are sort of in the backyard, so to speak, of where this project might go, they really don't feel that way.
We're going to hear in a little bit from a gentleman from Irving, Massachusetts, Joe Bucci, who says he's willing to consider this project. But when you went into Greenfield, Massachusetts, you met up with a city councilman and a lawyer named Isaac Mass?
Yeah, that's right. He's someone, he sort of took an interesting position. He wouldn't say definitively that he is for this pipeline, but he is for expanded natural gas, and he has a lot of economic reasons for the Greenfield area that he wants that pipeline to come in.
I think some people are scared into silence, even though they have a little more of an open mind. People don't come out and campaign for a corporation. That doesn't happen.
He says he supports more natural gas in part because it could bring more economic opportunity. This is
right.
What the company's been saying, and it's frankly what the governors of states like Connecticut have been saying for some time. We've got to lower natural gas costs. It's a bridge fuel that'll get us to our new renewable energy future, and we've got to capitalize on this now.
That's right. And that was something interesting to hear from people that are more proponents of this project, Isaac Mass and Stu Sargent. Both of them really pointed out that they have solar energy on their homes, and that they, you know, see this as that bridge fuel between fossil fuels and moving on towards more renewable energy, but sort of looking at it like, you know, we don't have the technology in their view that we can really rely fully on solar at this point, but they want to get to that place.
And again, just to be clear on something, the pipeline that we're talking about, this is a pipeline that's a couple feet in diameter. It's buried right. underground. Yeah. This isn't running along over the ground, but it is, again, going through fields and meadows. Mm-hmm. It's going through a lot of very rural territory all across this region, right?
That's right. And so that's a big concern for a lot of people that I spoke to, a lot of opponents to this project. You know, they're worried about the effects on the water, about there's wildlife preserves in this area, plants, the landscape. I mean, it's a hilly, you know, New England landscape. It's not, this isn't running, you know, underground in a flat part of Wyoming or something. This is, you know, a more complicated terrain to go through.
It is certainly complicated. Heading up into New Hampshire, you meet up with Mary Ann Harper. She's been leading a local opposition group ever since Kinder Morgan announced its plans to move a portion of the pipeline north from Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's right. So they moved. Originally, Kinder Morgan's plan was to cut through central Massachusetts, stay entirely through Massachusetts. It met a lot of opposition in central Massachusetts, which is a little more densely populated than western Massachusetts. So they moved this part of the line up into New Hampshire to go along a power line corridor. So people in New Hampshire have sort of gotten wind of this, and they're not happy about it either.
And Harper says she's concerned about the power of eminent domain, something that Kinder Morgan could be eligible for if it gets this federal approval.
If a private company wants to put in a project, just like if somebody wants to put a Walmart here in town, they need to negotiate the land. Some people will sell, some people won't. And we should have the right to say no. I don't think that there's any public good that's being served by this, which is what eminent domain is for.
Well, and of course, what eminent domain used to be for before the Kelo versus New London case here in Connecticut, well, that used to be really for big public projects. Now the Supreme Court has essentially said you can take private land for the public good, even if the money's going to a private company. I think that that's what Marianne Harper's talking here about. So there are some concerns about the possibility of federal approval of this pipeline means now someone can come in and take the land.
Yeah, that's right. Kinder Morgan says they're going to, you know, negotiate with every landowner that they will impact with this pipeline. But if they, you know, if it gets to a point where they can't negotiate, they can get this federal approval and get eminent domain. And so that's one of the big arguments is this a public good? And so opponents have really tried to strongly state that there is no public good in this, that it's a really bad thing. And Kinder Morgan's argument is that and backed up by the six New England governors who have said that the natural gas is needed in this region, that there needs to be more access to natural gas. They've used that argument to say that, you know, there's a public interest in bringing this pipeline through this area.
It's pretty hard to argue against public good when you have the state governments of six adjoining states all saying this right. is the public good, right?
Right. That's true. That's very true.
So as we head further into New Hampshire, in New Ipswich, you meet up with somebody, Emily Chatowski, who has a similar concern of other people that you met. There's a lot of people who do farming or, in her case, horse breeding, and they're right. worried about the impact on their livelihood.
That's right. And Emily Chatowski, she's very strongly against this pipeline. She runs a Newfoundland pony sanctuary. And so that's part of her argument is that these are very endangered ponies and that she's close to a compressor station. And that her big argument is, you know, that this is a rare breed and they would be negatively impacted by having a compressor station nearby.
We're stuck here because no one's going to buy this place and we have nowhere to go. And what are my choices? So Kinder Morgan needs to talk to us and mitigate the situation.
Yeah, so that's I think that's sort of the next round of arguments, assuming this project goes forward, is how do people negotiate with Kinder Morgan if this goes through? Are they going to be bought out? Are they going to, you know, get some compensation from the company for their land and for impacts?
Well, and how do you arrive at the value of that land? The value right. is different to everyone. If you've had the land in your family for 200 years and you built your own house there, maybe it has one value in the marketplace. Maybe you have another value. If you have a pony farm with a rare breed, it's very hard to negotiate what's the right price for that.
Right, right. And so that's, I mean, that really remains to be seen how those negotiations will happen. I think it sounds like it's going to happen on an individual basis, that Kinder Morgan's going to have to go to each of these people and see what they can get.
One of the last stops on your tour along this pipeline route is in Londonderry, New Hampshire, to a brand new housing development. It's one of these 55-plus communities. Who'd you meet there?
That's right. I met Martin Picos there. He was hanging out in the sort of model home of this new housing development.
I would like to benefit from it being in my own backyard. I would like to see my gas rates stay low and my energy costs stay low.
Picos says he has to trust that federal regulators will keep a close eye on the project. He also speaks from personal experience. He says he worked at a chemical company.
That's all I ever heard the last 5 years of my working career was safety, 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 safety.
And he hopes Kinder Morgan has that same focus.
And that's reporter Henry Yap from New England Public Radio from his reporting series going along this pipeline route through Massachusetts and into New Hampshire. And boy, it really is one of these complicated things where you hear again there another voice who is in some ways trying to make a case that maybe we should think about what we're doing before just opposing the pipeline altogether.
That's right. He had an interesting view, you know, sort of this this middle ground where he would like to see that he benefits from this, that he has lower gas rates. But he also he understands the safety concerns. But it felt very different. It was a very different sort of flavor. The area that he lives in compared to Western Massachusetts, where people are saying, you know, this is going to wipe out development. We cannot have anything near this pipeline. And right here, there's this luxury, almost housing development that's right next to where the pipeline would go. And so he's, you know, he trusts that the federal process has to work.
I do have to ask you, as you trail through Western Massachusetts, the Berkshires, there's a lot of people who I think would be predisposed politically to oppose a big corporate energy project like this. Did you feel something different once you crossed over into the live free or die state of New Hampshire?
It was, for one thing, it was harder to find the people, and it could have been the time of day that I was there, but harder to find people that were, out and about and wanting to talk to me about this project at all. Some people have said that's because they haven't had as much time to get used to it. But I think, you know, especially once I got to further east in New Hampshire, where I met Martin Picos, it's a different feeling. It's a more densely populated area. They're used to having things like pipelines, like power lines, things that you just kind of live with. And that's not really the feeling out in the Berkshires.
We're talking about pipeline expansion project, natural gas expansion all throughout New England and the Northeast. Henry Epp, a reporter for New England Public Radio, has been following this story and actually following the pipeline. We've been hearing some of those voices. When we come back from our break, we'll be talking to a few more people on different sides of this issue. We're also going to hear from Kinder Morgan. We talked to a representative from the pipeline company yesterday, and we recorded a few sound bites so that we can get some comment from them. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're taking a closer look at Kinder Morgan's proposed Northeast Energy Direct Pipeline. The project is the subject of a recent two-part series by New England Public Radio reporter Henry Epp, who joins us in studio today. He followed the pipeline's route through parts of New York, Massachusetts, and southern New Hampshire, talking to residents along the way. We'll meet a few of those residents on our air in just a moment. We want to take some phone calls, though, at 860-275-7266. Ben's in Wallingford. Hi, Ben. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm part of 350 Connecticut and the coalition of groups that are against all the New England pipelines. And I just wanted to comment that New England doesn't really need any of this gas that's coming through because we've been lowering our use through energy efficiency, and we can implement renewable energy without need for this gas. And the real reason they want to build these pipelines is that so they can export the gas through a Nova Scotia terminal that out to Europe to basically get a higher price for it. So the governors are kind of selling us a bill of goods that's not really true when they say it's for our use and it's going to lower our energy prices, since the gas company and the electric company have merged, so they're not going to lower their prices if they get more gas here.
Ben, thank you very much for raising that. In a moment, I actually want to play a little bit from Alan Four from Kinder Morgan, who I spoke to yesterday. We addressed that very issue about whether or not this gas is destined for export. I'm sure that's probably something, Henry, that you heard along the way, too. And there is a question about whether or not all this capacity means that there's actually going to be more gas coming through this region than they even have contracts for, like
right.
A surplus of gas. What do they do with it?
Right. Well, that's the question. They've gotten a few contracts with utilities, local utilities, but they're sort of leaving it open to more contracts that they say they may have. It's a little bit ambiguous where they stand on on that.
So let's listen to Alan Foer. He's a spokesperson for Kinder Morgan. I spoke with him yesterday. I asked him whether some of the gas that is planned for the Northeast region coming in through these new pipeline projects will go to export. Here's his response.
None of our gas is currently part of any export process or project. What we've done is we've contracted about 550 million cubic feet per day to local distribution companies, and I mentioned those previously, several of them. We've also announced an open season for a process to enable power generators to have enhanced electric reliability by signing up for contracts on our system, too, because typically pipeline capacity is from local distribution companies, companies who use it for natural gas to heat homes and businesses, for example. But natural gas for the region, over 50% of power generation, that's electricity, is now generated by natural gas. There's less nuclear, less coal, less fuel oil. Natural gas is picking up that load. So power generation supplied by natural gas is an increased part of that. So we've made a significant amount of the remainder of the capacity on this line available for power generation. So we think there will be additional interest in that. We also think the state of Maine, for example, will be part of this project. They currently have a process they're working through to contract for capacity for natural gas. This project is being designed and built for use by New England. And all of our customers today are part of a project that is for New England, all the customers. Now, having said all that, to your question about LNG, we are an open access line. As part of the requirements for being an interstate natural gas pipeline system. And we have to be open to credit-worthy companies who want to contract for gas on our line or a transportation company. But none of those contractors, none of those contracts currently are for LNG export, and frankly, but they may never be because our focus and the credit-worthy companies that have the ability to sign long-term contracts on projects like these currently are the utilities and the local distribution companies, all based in New England.
So that's Alan Foer. He's Vice President of Public Affairs for Kinder Morgan. I spoke with him yesterday. Henry Epp, just so our listeners understand, I think, a little bit more about what he's talking about there, he's saying that this pipeline expansion project is meant to bring in fuel that is going to be used here in New England.
Right.
But
right.
There's a possibility that it could be used elsewhere as well.
That's right. So they have to be open to anyone, as he says, credit-worthy company that wants to connect to their pipeline. So if that were to be someone that wants to create, make this natural gas into liquefy natural gas and export it, that could happen. He's saying right now that that's not in the works, but it could happen.
So, of course, yes, a lot of the opponents are saying that this is meant for export all along. He's saying that there's a possibility for export, but that's not the main reason for it. Let's turn to a few people who Henry met along the way as he was reporting. Michelle Cole is an organic farm owner in Windsor, Massachusetts. She joins us by phone today. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
And Joe Bucci is here. He's a lifelong resident of Irving, Massachusetts, who also met up with Henry along his reporting trip. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call, and I'm here for your questions.
Well, I tell you what, Joe, we'll get to you in just one moment. I guess I want to turn to you, Michelle, first. I mean, one of the things we talked with Alan Foer about, I mentioned in the first part of the program, is the compressor stations that are along the pipeline route. He is saying that in many cases there are developments planned for near their compressor stations. People want to live near them. You have concerns about a compressor station in your town, though. Tell me those concerns.
Well, I mean, the concerns are, you know, basically for the health of the citizens, the potential negative effect on my farm, as well as the the reduction in property values around in the town and around the compressor station. I can't imagine why anyone would want to live near a compressor station. They're noisy, and by design, they emit the gas. I mean, they outgas the, they release gas to help regulate the pressure. So, you know, it's not accidental. This is what it's designed to do. The fracking chemicals have been shown to travel with the gas. The gas is going to contain these chemicals, which aren't always disclosed, so we don't know what the contents of this gas is going to be.
Well,
what volume is going to be released, or how often?
Well, what can you tell us about the property value piece of this? I mean, are you and your neighbors concerned that the property values across your community are going to go down? And do you have any evidence of this happening already as this pipeline is proposed for your region?
We absolutely do have it. Well, we have both concern and evidence. A piece of land just sold on my road, East Windsor Road, and I know the owner. I bought my land from her, and she said that she let the land go for less than she was hoping to get because she's concerned that she won't be able to sell it at all once the compressor station goes in.
In my conversation with Kinder Morgan's Alan Foer, I asked what the company is doing for homeowners who think that their property values may be negatively impacted by the proposed route. Let's just listen to what he had to say.
Well, the first thing is to remember we're looking for a small easement, about a 50-foot permanent easement for this project. And landowners are paid for access to their property. They're paid for the easement. They're paid for temporary workspace. They're paid for impacts specifically to their property. So in effect, we're paying for their property, the easement that we're going to be using, but they get to retain ownership of that.
But in your case, you're saying that because this pipeline isn't going through your property directly, Michelle, you haven't really been contacted. You're not going to get any compensation at all.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Very few landowners are going to be compensated at all. And hundreds and thousands of properties are affected by this negatively.
Hey, Henry, could you just talk a little bit more about what we know about the compensation structure that they're planning? Because obviously there's going to be one compensation structure for if the pipeline is going to go through my property, they're going to dig it up and lay down pipeline. Is there anything else in place for people who are within some sort of radius of the pipeline coming through?
Well, that's not clear. And I asked Kinder Morgan about that, and they said they'll negotiate with all landowners. But I think in that they mean people that are going to be actually impacted that will have a pipeline on their property. For the people like Michelle, who are in the radius but not necessarily on that, I think it's unclear at this point.
We're going to be getting some more phone calls from you at 860-275-7266 in a moment, but I want to turn to Joe Bucci from Irving, Massachusetts, who joins us by phone today. And Joe, you have a slightly different perspective on this. You've said that the pipeline is something that you're willing to consider. Talk about how you feel about this project.
Well, I believe it's beneficial to listen to the broad range of aspects that need to be addressed, because here in Franklin County, and I'm sure that also in Berkshire County, west of us, the economy has been impacted greatly and negatively, and folks have moved away because there's nothing for them to work at here and earn a living, and so it's important for us to consider the things that can improve our situation for employing people, keeping our own families here even, for one to make a living, you must have a way to do that. Companies have moved away from here because of the cost of energy being so high, and we have a circumstance where one company moved actually to one of our southern towns because natural gas was readily available there, where it is not here in our north of that town. And we've had gas lines, I know, in the southwest part of Greenfield. It's probably been here for the turn of the century, the 20th century. And we've had really no negative impact from natural gas, and it has been a boon to us because it provides an alternative, clean, reasonable method of creating energy. We have lost here in the New England area, especially around our area, a lot of generating plants. We lost Roe several years ago, quite a few years ago. We just took the Yankee plant offline. We lost the coal generation plant in East Hampton. And now it's further and further away that we must contract to get electricity in here and other energies to provide, you know, an economy here. And
yeah.
I think it's really important that we listen to all the aspects and rely on the people of our government who are just like us. They're not malicious and they're not evil intended. They work hard at getting the best results for what we do.
Well,
we always use that term, you know, get the best bang for our buck.
I just want to turn to Henry up very quickly because another one of these benefits that the company has been talking about is actually direct tax relief to communities where the pipeline is going through. What can you tell us about that? Because obviously supporters of the pipeline project or people like our guests here who are willing to consider it say it could bring jobs, it could lower our overall energy costs. What about the notion that towns that have the pipeline going through it are actually going to get some sort of tax benefit?
Well, they will have to pay taxes to the town to have the pipeline go through. So there will be some benefit to towns in that way. And, you know, we heard from Stu Sargent earlier in the program. He's someone that I spoke to that's for this pipeline. And he was mentioning, you know, if the town needs, you know, a fire truck or whatever, that maybe they can negotiate. And so that's to be seen. That could happen. I liken it to sort of there's the casino proposal planning, you know, a casino that's happening in Springfield. Through the process of that, there were all this talk of mitigation for all the towns around the casino. Maybe we will see something like that where towns can be compensated in some way for having this pipeline come through.
I'm going to get to a few phone calls quickly. Gary's in Mansfield. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind? You're on the air.
Yeah, so one thing no one's mentioned is that natural gas is a greenhouse gas by itself. And I think someone's already mentioned that there's a venting at compressor stations of natural gas. There's leaks of natural gas from the compressor stations, metering stations. And all of this contributes to global warming, which is already affecting the entire Earth.
And so Gary's making the point here, Henry, up that the release through leaks or through these compressor stations of natural gas actually add to climate change. Of course, one of the reasons why natural gas is coming into this area, as we heard earlier, is because a lot of the coal-burning plants that we used to have that were very dirty and contributing to greenhouse gases are gone.
Right. That's right. And he's right. I mean, it is still a fossil fuel. So that's an argument that's underlined a lot of the opposition to this. Is it's not just people. It comes to the local level of, you know, we don't want this on our organic farm. We don't want this in our backyard, that kind of thing. But there's an underlying current of I think a lot of people that are opposed to this are opposed to it in part because they don't want to see continued use of fossil fuel and see this as something that's very real that could come here and see it as something to oppose because they want to move to renewable energy and away from fossil fuels in a grander sense attempt to address global warming.
Michelle Cole, before I let you go, I'm just wondering if you can address some of what Joe and some of the other guests have said so far, which is, yes, this pipeline project through your backyard, more or less, is going to be invasive, but it could serve to drive down costs of fuel. It could bring jobs to the region. Are those some things that you've taken into consideration as you've looked at this project?
I have, you know, thought all of that through, but I caution people that, you know, take the word of the industry that this pipeline is needed. I believe that the gas prices will go up with the export. I think it's clear that a lot of this gas is destined for export. That will only mean higher prices for us. And with regard to the benefits to the town, there's reports all over the place from Pennsylvania, where these community benefits agreements, a new fire truck, this equipment for the town, that equipment for the town, are not honored. They're reneged on by Kinder Morgan, who, by the way, convicted of felonies in California regarding the deaths of five people. You know, this is a
you know, a criminal organization, as far as I'm concerned, and why we trust the word they say, I will never understand.
Michelle Cole is an organic farm owner in Windsor, Massachusetts. Joe Bucci is a lifelong resident of Irving, Massachusetts. They both joined us by phone. I want to thank you both for joining us. When we come back from a break, we're going to be talking more about the Connecticut part of this expansion project. We're joined by Henry Epp. He's a reporter at New England Public Radio who's been following the pipeline expansion project through Massachusetts and into New Hampshire. We're going to be talking about what's happening in Connecticut with a representative from the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. That's coming up next, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on Monday's show, two different conversations. One about the Iran nuclear deal with Major General Mike Jones and Truman National Security Fellow Amir Hanjani. They recently debated their issue at the World Affairs Council of Connecticut. We'll talk to them. We'll hear from Connecticut Congressman Gary Franks. We haven't been sure where he is, but he's turned up recently. He's got a brand new book coming out later on this year called With God, For God, and For Country, Because We Can Do Better. Gary Franks coming up on the next Where We Live. Today, we're looking at some plans to expand New England's natural gas infrastructure. The company Kinder Morgan is behind a number of these proposed projects, including one right here in our backyard called the Connecticut Expansion Project. I asked about it in a recent conversation with Kinder Morgan's Alan Foer.
It is locating additional pipe, what we call looping, next to existing pipe. It's much like you might consider it an off-ramp. So small segments of pipe and designed to increase capacity on existing system. It's a way to add additional natural gas systems without constructing an entirely new pipeline system. A very effective way to deal with additional supply needs, and Connecticut does have additional natural gas needs, as does the region. So this project is not affiliated with the Northeast Energy Direct project. Two separate and distinct projects on their own permitting schedule, seeking separate permits from the state and federal agencies. So there's a small piece of Connecticut expansion in New York, in Massachusetts, and in Connecticut. Three small segments providing additional natural gas to Connecticut.
That's Kinder Morgan spokesman Alan Foer. I spoke with him yesterday. Joining us also in studio is Henry Epp from New England Public Radio, who's been doing pipeline reporting in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Joining us now in studio is Katie Dykes, Deputy Commissioner for Energy at the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Welcome back to our show.
Thanks so much.
So you heard the Kinder Morgan representative describe a bit of what this Connecticut expansion project for them is. What more can you tell us about it from the deep perspective?
Well, I would distinguish it, this particular project, from the Northeast Direct in the sense that this project in Connecticut is really laying additional pipe in a pathway where there is pipeline already existing. So a lot of the impacts, as I understand, are really associated with the construction phase, but we're not talking about acquiring new right of way, putting pipeline in locations that it doesn't already exist. So that sort of changes a lot of the issues in terms of impacts and effect to landowners and so on.
What can you tell us about any planned timing, public comment period? Because this is a much different thing than the other pipeline we were talking about. Is there some sort of a plan for how people in this area who might be affected are going to be able to express their feelings?
Sure. That's handled more on the environmental quality side of our department, but we are looking at the environmental reports that have been developed for the environmental review that's taken place, you know, under the FERC process. We're looking at impacts to water quality, impacts to wildlife, all of those associated things, and I know we're participating in that very extensively. But, you know, I think it is this is a part of – I mean, I think what you hear is that there's intense debate going on all around New England around siting of infrastructure. And I say that broadly, not just for gas pipelines, but also transmission lines to bring in large-scale hydropower, for example, is a huge debate going on in New Hampshire. Siting of wind farms up in northern Maine that are going to supply more renewables. What are the impacts on bats and avian species? And, you know, we are making a huge transition to a clean energy economy, a clean energy future in New England, and that's requiring companies and regulators and the public to engage in very, you know, important conversations about where are the best places to site these projects and how should landowners be compensated and how can we ensure that that these projects are going to come online in the time that we need them in order to provide cheaper, cleaner, more reliable electricity and energy for our families and businesses.
Well, from the state level, what do you see as the answer there? I mean, from what I've heard in reporting is people, you know, are opposed to gas pipelines, they're opposed to wind farms, they're opposed to most things. What's the way forward in your view?
Well, you know, let's be honest. New England is a very dense region. We're not Texas. We're not Nebraska. You have a lot of residential population, you know, around locations where we need to site infrastructure to bring energy in and to develop clean energy sources. There is a lot of these things are related, you know, and for example, renewables, the wind doesn't blow all the time. The sun is not always shining. And so what's going to keep the lights on when the renewables aren't available? And a lot of times, you know, the options there, natural gas is a good option. In 2007, we were generating 15% of our electricity from oil and coal, and we're retiring a lot of that. And by 2024, we expect renewables to be almost equivalent to that amount, New England-wide. And so you have to you're going to have a balance, and we're trying to work this out. I was really proud to see our Connecticut General Assembly pass a really important piece of legislation this past session. That gives our department the ability to run a competitive RFP that's going to be open to almost all of these resources to see what is the best, most cost-effective, clean option to support electricity, whether it's energy efficiency, renewables, large-scale hydropower.
But I just want to stop you on that real quick, Katie, because I think one of the issues, though, is when the governor some years ago comes out and says, we're going to build new natural gas infrastructure. This is our plan. When the six New England governors get together and say natural gas is the future, you can do an RFP all you want. It sounds like natural gas is kind of at the top of the list, and they're going to get most of the favors.
You know, I'm so glad that you're pointing this out, because I think it's the Connecticut pathway, the Connecticut approach here is different. We have, when you look at this legislation, we are not saying that gas is the chosen resource. We recognize that we have a gas infrastructure challenge, but there are a lot of we've built a lot of gas power plants in this region in the last 10 years. We don't have enough pipelines to serve them. But we realize that there's different ways to solve that problem, not necessarily with gas. Gas pipelines are probably the most cost-effective way to address it, but you can also solve the problem by building things that don't run on gas, clean generation, transmission for hydropower, renewables that can offset gas generation, and doing efficiency. And so we are running an open, competitive process. We just put out a notice about this a week ago. We're going to let everything compete so that we can right-size our investment in gas by maxing out all the cost-effective efficiency that's out there, the hydro, the renewables. We want to have an open, competitive, level playing field and to bring forward the cheapest, cleanest, most reliable options.
I want to get to the phones really quickly. Dennis is calling from Stafford Springs. Hi, Dennis. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hi, John. It's nice to talk to you. I'm an ex-Pittsburgher myself.
Good to hear from you, Dennis.
Thank you. I want to say hello to Katie. How are you?
Doing well.
I'm the town engineer in Stafford, and you know, we've made a choice a couple of years ago. We've been working with a gas company in Katie's office to try and bring natural gas to Stafford Springs. Between our businesses and the municipal buildings, you know, we calculated that we could save upwards of $3 million a year in energy costs. Between our hospital and, you know, a 3M plant, a defense contractor, a bearings facility, a woolen manufacturer, we have a lot of use for it, and that's economic development at its core.
Dennis, thank you very much for raising that. So he's talking about a specific town project that he thinks is going to work to lower prices in the town, maybe create jobs. This is, I assume, the sort of thing that you're trying to do, Katie.
Right, and the Connecticut Expansion Project is bringing, is slated to bring in more gas capacity to serve projects like this. We are a state that is unique in heating. You know, half of our residences are heating with fuel oil, and by converting over to natural gas, if that's a cost-effective option for folks, which we think it is, folks can be significantly lowering their bills and also reducing carbon emissions by 25%. There's, you know, this is part, we always stress that natural gas is sort of a step on the way to an even cleaner, cheaper future. But at this moment, we see that families and businesses can achieve significant cost savings by shifting over to natural gas, and that enables us to be able to afford programs that can continue to expand our investment in renewables and efficiency.
You know, you mentioned renewables earlier, and I should say, so I live out in the western part of Connecticut and in Winsted, and we've been driving up through the Berkshires for years, and for several years we had signs about a wind farm that was slated for Colebrook, and many people in the town didn't want a wind farm there, and that's being assembled right now, and you can see the gigantic windmills on the hill in Colebrook. That's, of course, a renewable form of energy, but people really didn't want it in their backyard because it impacts their life directly. You go further up into the Berkshires, and people say, well, I don't want the pipeline coming through because that's going to negatively impact my way of life. How do you draw the balance, Katie, between the fact that, yes, we are densely populated, we're very wooded, we believe very strongly in town government, we believe very strongly in our rural way of life in parts of our region? How do we balance these things? Because some people are so directly impacted by many types of energy projects that they are going to want to stand in the way of something that may indeed benefit others. But for them, they see it as catastrophic, not just a bad idea, but something that will end their way of life.
There's two ways. One is from the standpoint of policymakers who are driving these investments, having open competitive processes like we do that are open to a broad range of resources so you can get the right mix that achieve, you know, the greatest number of your policy goals. Is really important. And then on the other side, you know, environmental review processes, I can't stress enough how important that is as part of our democracy and part of our capital, you know, development. It gives us a way to balance economic, engineering, and environmental values. You know, public participation makes these projects stronger. The public needs information about what's happening. And project developers, whether they say it or not, they need to hear from the public so that they know, you know, about how to – where are the optimal sites to put these projects forward.
Well, and we just have a couple minutes left. There's we talked about the Kinder Morgan expansion project in Connecticut. There's actually a very small bit of Connecticut that is affected in any way. There are other gas expansion projects slated for the state as well, Spectra Energy?
That's correct, yeah. We have three major pipeline systems that are crossing our state. And the way that pipelines work, they're regulated. So they can't build these pipelines on spec. They have to have demand. They have to have contracts signed up for off-takers for this gas. And so often what you'll see is that they'll be making, you know, incremental upgrades to their system bit by bit, you know, and often through, you know, digging up and replacing smaller pipe with larger pipe in small sections or laying additional pipe next to existing pipe and things of that nature. And so over time, you may see, for example, on the Algonquin system, there's at least three different projects that are being proposed, all for incremental upgrades to that Algonquin system that crosses Connecticut in existing where there already is gas pipeline in the ground.
And you mentioned this earlier, Henry. I mean, mm-hmm. this big project that you were reporting on that lays all this new pipe and yeah. there's all this controversy, it's not the only natural gas through Western Massachusetts by a long shot.
No, not at all. There's already a line that goes south sort of along the Mass Turnpike, which has been there for a long time.
It's been there for a long time, almost comes down into Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So for our listeners who want to know a little bit more about the Connecticut gas projects, Katie Dykes, what do they do? Where do they go? We've got about a minute left.
Well, they can come to our DEEP website. We participate in these different, you know, projects from the environmental quality side. You can also go to the FERC website. So FERC obviously is a federal. They have to grant the permits for these projects overall and do the overarching federal environmental impact assessment. So, and of course, you can go and look at the website for the three gas companies that are the three gas systems in our region.
And this RFP process that you're talking about goes for how long?
Yeah, so we just issued a notice on that. I really hope your listeners will come to the DEEP website and take a look and give us some comments on how we're running that competition. We are already launching part of that in partnership with Rhode Island and Massachusetts. We're doing a three-state RFP for grid-scale clean energy. That's one of the types of resources we can procure, and we expect that to be launched this October. So bidders can start giving us bids on their projects. We'll be looking at an RFP for Connecticut focused on smaller scale renewables and energy efficiency. And then we're working with other states on the possibility of an RFP for gas that will come this fall. So deep look at our website and give us some comments.
Katie Dykes is Deputy Commissioner for Energy at the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Thanks as always. I appreciate it.
Thanks
also to Henry Yep, who's a reporter for New England Public Radio. You can find out more about his pipeline reporting at nepr.net. Henry, great work. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Our program today was produced by Lydia Brown. Kion Wolf runs the board here as our technical producer. Katie Tolarski is the executive producer. I'm John Dankosky. It's Where We Live.